On tonight's episode, we watched Pompeii.
It forward. Pompeii it forward.
What?
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey everyone, I'm Stuart Wellington.
Elliot Kalin here, rounding out the cast himself.
Yeah.
And featuring no one else.
Just three guys.
Special guest star, the regular people.
It's like a one-man show times three.
Yep. We're like a bunch of Three Stooges, except there's only one of us.
Wait.
This is one of those identity movies.
So we're all in John Cusack's head.
Yeah. And we're like, John, what is with the career choices you're making?
It's like Multiplicity if they stopped at two clones plus the original guy.
Exactly. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde if there was a third guy who was also involved.
Larry.
Called Larry. Dr. Jekyll's buddy.
Dr. Jekyll's buddy, Larry.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Larry.
Even Larry's like, I feel like I'm kind of extraneous here, guys.
It's kind of a third wheel. But many things have three wheels. Tricycles, that Mr. Bean car that's always getting knocked over.
Yeah. Motorcycles with sidecars. I guess they've got four wheels, really.
Yeah.
I mean, not if you build them wrong.
That's true. If it's built brokenly, then yeah.
So would Larry be the id, the ego, or the superego, Dan?
No, he's the neighbor.
Oh, he's
who's always like, what's going on over at the Jekyll place? I got to check in.
Yeah,
you know.
It's a kind of a Three's Company situation.
He's the Mr. Roper.
So he always walks in and he thinks Dr. Jekyll's giving Mr. Hyde a hand job or something. No. They're like, no, we're teaching each other to dance. And he's like, that's not what it looked like.
There's only one of them at a time, but yeah, certainly.
It's called masturbating, guys. Grow up.
Okay. Don't understand where this conversation went. Dan, what do we do on this thing
this
that we're
is
doing? What is
podcast.
This?
Theoretically, we
it's
watch
a podcast that you downloaded.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, they know that. Presumably, they know that far.
Unless they're streaming it.
Yeah, or they're like being trapped somewhere. And forced
look,
to
you got
it.
This podcast somehow. Maybe you downloaded it. Maybe you found it in a bottle that you found in the ocean.
Yeah, maybe a genie gave you a compact disc to play. And this
he yanked it out of a Hellraiser guy's head.
But the point is, we watch a bad movie.
Maybe you're at an exorcism, and the demon possessed youth is just repeating this to you. The point is, it's a podcast.
Yeah, the premise, such as it is, that we watch a bad movie and then we discuss it.
Then we yakety yak
with
about
you.
It.
I mean, you don't really say anything.
You can say, yeah.
We just won't.
We won't hear you.
Hear it.
Not because we can't, but because we refuse to. Whatever you're saying right now, I can't hear it. La 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 la, not listening. Dan, continue.
So we watched tonight Pompeii.
Pompeii!
Based on the true story of Pompeii.
loosely based on real events.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to find that Pompeii is about as old-fashioned a natural disaster movie set in a historical setting as you can get.
Yeah.
What are other historical disaster films?
Well, I'm going to recommend one.
Dante's
later.
Peak.
Okay, so but you have movies like San Francisco, The Last Days of Pompeii, which is a much earlier movie about the eruption of Vesuvius. You
it's
have
good
like,
that they said The Last Days of Pompeii rather than The Early Days of Pompeii.
It's them founding the city. And people are like, when's this volcano going to erupt?
But what about the Poseidon Adventure?
No, not exactly.
What about Titanic?
I think it was
Titanic, kind of. I mean, that's less of a natural disaster, but you'd have a lot of these movies.
And this movie certainly wishes it was Titanic at points.
Yes, very much so. During the studio era especially, you had a lot of movies that were like, we're going to take a real life, like the San Francisco earthquake or like the fire, Great Fire of Chicago.
And we're going to add Mickey Rooney to it.
Well, always. That was law, though. Roosevelt signed that into law.
Yeah.
That was the Mickey Rooney Historical Disaster Film Act because Rooney needed the work. Come on.
Yeah.
He was just a kid. He was supporting his whole family. It was the Depression. Anyway, so you had they would say, here's a natural disaster. Everyone knows it's going to happen, so that's instant suspense. We'll have a love triangle between like a good guy and a bad guy. and a girl.
Okay.
And then, yeah, that was the third point.
Yeah, there's
the
only
triangle.
2 points.
So she was the Larry in this case.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and Larry.
Oh, yeah, it's a love triangle. Did I not mention that? Dr. Jekyll has a crush on Larry, but Larry has a crush on Hyde.
Yeah, because he's a bad boy, dude.
And so...
Yeah.
It's a real Larry's Superman love bad boy.
So Dr. Jekyll keeps changing into Hyde to get Larry to like him. And at the end, Larry's like, Dr. Jekyll, I wasn't going to like you until you liked yourself.
Exactly.
And Dr. Jekyll's like, so you like me now? And Larry's like, no, I don't. I'm going out with Dracula now.
The ultimate Mr. Hyde.
The ultimate bad boy.
Dracula, the ultimate Mr. Hyde. What a weird slogan. Yeah.
So speaking of Draculas, this movie has Kiefer Sutherland.
How was he a Dracula?
He was a Dracula in Lost Boys, dude.
I guess he was a vampire. He wasn't a Dracula. Unless it was called Dracula's Kids. It was the Drac Pack.
Little Draculas.
Little Dracula Jr.
California Drac.
Little known fact about Drac.
Drac.
I didn't have anything. I just wanted to say that.
He has a kid named Keither. So let's talk about...
in a mirror world.
This is an old-fashioned formula. What? And this is a... And they did not add anything new to it until, let's say, the last 25 minutes of the movie. Let's explain. We begin in Britannia in the year 62 AD.
Whoa, 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 whoa. This is a movie about the Roman city of Pompeii.
Well, technically, Rome was just a city. It was it's the ancient city of Pompeii that was part of the empire, I guess.
All right, carry on.
So, carry on.
That wasn't my concern.
Like the British series, yeah. Carry on?
Carry on up your mother. Spoilers.
Whoa. Whoa.
Whatever.
It was the unreleased one.
Yeah.
Dad's Mom, it was called.
Dad's Armies, Carry On.
Dad's Armies, Mom, Carry On, up the Academy of Your Life.
Up your bloody...
Are You Being Served Towers?
Yeah.
Python.
Etc.
Why are you looking at me, Dan?
Damn Busters.
Yeah.
Yeah, why were you looking at Stuart?
I don't know. He's a handsome fellow.
He is. Nice to look at. Anyway, we start in Britannia, and I know it's about Pompeii, but for some reason we start in Britannia, and here's the reason.
Because Thulsa Doom's about to show up and kill Conan's dad and mom.
Pretty much, yes. So the Romans are subduing the Celts, and in doing so they massacre a village, but they leave one boy alive by accident who has seen Keither
Harry Potter.
Who's seen Keither Sutherland, who plays Corvus, a Roman general who becomes a senator later on. And
his like nerdy bodyguard.
And he has and his nerdy bodyguard who apparently
car wrinkles?
His bodyguard who looks like a cross between like Paul Rubens and Jeff Goldblum and Eddie Deason
and
Buff.
Anthony Weiner.
And Anthony Weiner. Yeah.
Who
yeah.
kind of looks like those guys already.
He did look like Anthony Weiner. That's right. And his name was like Trucules or something like that.
Broculus.
Broculus Trucules. It's when...
Broculus Mayhem Trucules.
Yeah, he was based on Brock Mayhem before he existed. That's former Flophouse guest host and great friend of us, Brock Mayhem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look him up.
Hello, Brock.
On the internet at brockmayhan.edu/gov+or-ab/2 equals x.
Solve for x.
.tumblr. So.
So anyway, Kiefer Sutherland and Trucules, Broculus, kill Kiefer Sutherland as a boy. No, kill this little boy's parents. Little boy escapes and is taken captive as a slave, and 17 years later, he has grown up to be Milo.
His name's Milo?
Yeah, I'm just realizing that looking at the Wikipedia entry. I had no idea what most of the characters' names were in this movie, but he grows up to be Kit Harington.
I hope the other gladiator's name is Otis.
And the end of the movie is the only way to escape Vesuvius is to transmorph into a dog and a cat. Into a pug and a cat.
And they go, pause, don't fail us now. Whoop, 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 whoop.
One of them turns into a little helicopter and flies the other one to safety.
Well, Milo
I was gonna say there's
uses
a dog and a cat-shaped hole in the screen of the movie screen.
Milo uses his ears like helicopter blades and flies them above the smoking hot ash that's falling on the city.
Like the eagles in Tolkien.
That's true. That's an accurate reference.
Yeah, thanks. It is in that thing. That's a thing. So anyway, he grows up to be Kit Harington from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
You mean
Kit Harington sounds like a girl orphan character.
That's true.
Like from the Depression,
like an Edwardian juvenile adventure novel.
Yeah, there's a series of novels starring Kit Harington.
Or Kit Harington is like a girl gumshoe reporter.
Well, she starts out as a boxcar child, and she works her way up to be
president.
Yeah,
the first little girl president, and she fights Hitler in a jacks tournament.
Okay.
And she wins all his dollies, which leads him to invade Poland.
Oh, wow. So the dark really, ending, yeah.
Ultimately, she caused more harm.
Oh, there's a reason they impeached her. It's an
interesting impeachment based on things done as a little baby.
No, she was already president.
She wasn't a baby?
No, she was a little girl. She was like 8.
Okay.
High crimes. Well, okay, that makes more sense. The state. Anyway.
High crimes and misdemeanor, the cop's villain.
Wait, misdemeanor was a villain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Misdemeanor's a bad thing. And when my parents went to go see the movie Crimes and Misdemeanors, and I was a kid, I thought it was about that character. Anyway.
Sexy.
So Milo, with no Otis, eventually grows up to be a gladiator called the Celt, who is owned by the best character in the movie,
yep.
A sort of foppish Dom DeLuise in History of the World Part 1. As you were saying, Stuart, he was basically – what's the character from Futurama?
Yeah, Hedonismbot or whatever.
Hedonismbot.
I was thinking about how great a joke that is on Futurama. I mean, number one, just like the character, but number two, the idea that someone created a robot for the express purpose of being hedonistic.
Yeah.
And he's like a robot couch that feeds himself grapes, right? Yeah. Or something like that. Anyway.
So great.
But he's not in this either. But this slave owner is, and he is leading him some – I guess the slaves are taking this guy
he
somewhere.
He looks kind of like Guy Fieri's ancestor, basically.
Yeah, but without the frosted tips.
That's before they invented them.
Yeah, back then when you wanted frosted tips, you had to put ice in your hair.
You had to climb the mountains and fight frost giants.
To learn the secret of their hair.
Sure. Continue, I guess.
So on the road while he's being brought to Pompeii, Milo runs across a carriage carrying Cassia, played by Emily Browning, who is the daughter of Jared Harris as some big muckety-muck-macher in Pompeii.
Yeah.
She's returning from Rome, and her horse dies or something? Her horse is hurt, and she convinces the slave owner to unlock Milo so that he can soothe the horse to death, because being a Celt, he knows horses, and he manages to whisper to the horse until it gets distracted and then snaps its neck to put it out of its misery.
But we should point out there's a number of recurring Flophouse favorites here. You got Emily Browning, who was in Sucker Punch and The Uninvited. You got Jared Harris from The Quiet Ones.
Kiefer Sutherland from Mirrors.
You got director Paul W.S. Anderson from The Three Musketeers.
Oh,
it's a real flop coming.
It's a flop reunion.
Yeah,
who's flop coming queen?
Emily Browning in this case, right?
Yeah.
You mean with her crazy cheekbones that were just slicing people up left and right? They were so sharp.
Baby cheekbones.
She has really defined cheekbones to the point that I wanted her to use them as a weapon at the end.
Sure.
Like Kiefer Sutherland would swing a sword at her and she'd catch it on her cheekbone and push it away and then slash at him with her cheekbone.
You were worried that the Mount Pompeii would erupt because of the proximity to the gravitational pull of her enormous cheekbones.
Yeah, and no, it was Mount Vesuvius. Pompeii is a city.
It's not Mount Pompeii.
Mount Pompeii. Oh, man.
Should I watch the movie again?
Maybe just read up anything on it. But your punishment is to watch the movie again.
No.
But anyway, Cassia is taken with this slave. Long story short, that's the love triangle becomes Cassia, who has a crush on this slave who's becoming a famous gladiator, and who befriends Atabisi, who was the previous star gladiator.
Yeah.
And
Mr. Echo from Lost.
And the third point in the triangle is Kiefer Sutherland, who returns to Pompeii, not returns, just shows up. He's now a big Roman senator with an army behind him.
He has not aged a day.
He has not aged a day, and neither has his Anthony Weiner sidekick.
No.
And apparently Cassia ran from Rome because Kiefer Sutherland wanted to marry her. Now he's there, and he's saying – And he's there as a possible investor in Jared Harris's new building projects in Pompeii. And I have to admit, until two of the action scenes that came up later, the most exciting part of the movie was when Jared Harris was showing his proposed models to Kiefer Sutherland to show him what kind of projects he should invest in.
But I don't know that that was like, but I don't know that was the content of the scene either, though. That was like, you got two real ham bones hamming it up, yeah. Jared Harris and Kiefer Sutherland. And Kiefer Sutherland, I enjoyed very much in this movie. Like, the more mustache twirly he got, the better.
Yeah. As the movie goes on, he becomes more and more cartoonish and just smirks through everything. And, like, the movie needed more of that. Let's just say this while we're talking about it. This is a bland movie, and it could have used more charming character. And Kiefer Sutherland provides a little bit of that. The guy who plays the decadent gladiator owner provides a little bit of that. The hero is like a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah. His gladiator pal is more
his
fun.
His gladiator pal is more fun and has a more heroic climax at the end.
I kind of wish that instead of Kit Harington, Milo's backstory,
Gold Reporter.
the beginning of the movie had just been Kiefer Sutherland like actively pursuing Emily Browning's character, like awkwardly pursuing her constantly in Rome and her like rebuffing him.
Yeah.
So they were like, man, what a jerk. And they played more of that up. Because I felt that stuff was way more exciting than any of the other gladiator
than any of
bullshit.
Conan the Barbarian gladiator ripoff stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
To make a long story short, it all comes to a head when Milo has recognized the people who killed his family. And for whatever reason.
Hey, you. Don't I know you're somewhere?
Yeah. Didn't you kill someone I know? Who was it?
He's like, probably. I killed a million people.
No. It was someone close to me.
But the whole thing is...
I'm glad that he doesn't remember who he knows who got killed.
Was it... No, it wasn't my teacher. I killed my teacher. Was it... it's right on the tip of my tongue. It was a man and a woman.
My...
Sonny and Cher. You killed Sonny and Cher, right? My favorite song and dance team?
Personal assistant.
You killed my...
Big Ego's
moth,
killed
my moth,
Sonny
my
Cher,
bet moth. And my dat. You killed my digital audio tape, right? That's what it was. Why'd you do that? Stomped my moth and broke my tape? All my archives were on that. I know it's going to break down eventually anyway. It's not a great archival format. But still, all the same, at least give me time to transfer it to something a little more permanent. Anyway, great to see you. I'll get revenge later. How's the family? How are the folks? Still not married, huh, Jason Cassia? Well, let me tell you. Hey, I'm interested in her too. That's amazing. It's the cheekbones. Yeah, got to watch yourself. I got too close and it was like, shoot, I didn't even touch her and it still cut me somehow. Like a master swordsman ninja sword, just slicing the molecules of air. Anyway, I've tossed long enough, I guess. Yep. He looks like you got important business to do. You got all these centurions, and that guy looks like Anthony Weiner right next to you. He's looking pretty bored. I know you got a lot of important business. Jared Harris, I think, wanted to talk to you. That guy is a really good actor. He's got a little bit of the ham in him, but still really great. Loved him on Mad Men. When is Mad Men coming back? Am I really going to have to wait until next year for all the episodes? But excuse me, I'm chatting too much, and I got a gladiator fight to get to. Fight to the death. Oh, boy. Anyway, it's a living, as they say on the Flintstones. Now, is the Flintstones, how far away are we from that? Because we're still living in stone houses and wearing like togas and like sandals
a lot.
And stuff. Like, are we cavemen
family,
or are we Romans? Or were they?
What age of the world he's living
now,
in?
I don't understand. Like,
era.
Where are we in relation to the Bible? Like, did that happen yet? Or because I don't know. It's AD, right?
That happened after Flintstones.
After Flintstones. That's what AD stands for, after the Flintstones.
I'm jumping in here and I'm handling the Keithers part.
Anyway, Keithers. But I'm rambling on, but that's me. I don't have a lot of people to talk to in the slave pits. So what is GNU with you? What's going on? You look like you haven't
what
aged
a day. What
is GNU
with you?
You heard me. It's my favorite animal. Anyway, when you're a slave, you're looking for anything that'll liven things up, and I found a picture of a GNU once. Just carry it with me. I'll show it to you right here if I can find
like
it.
On a cable?
Not a lot of pockets in this toga, and yet I'm still having trouble finding it.
Oh,
yeah, it was a drawn picture, but it was really photorealistic, which is a word I just used, even though we don't have those yet. Like anyway, the thing about GNUs is they're also
like
called wildebeests. But I like calling them GNUs because it's like, is it new? Is it GNU? I don't know. It's
a
mystery.
Fun, I
and I love mysteries. Speaking of, have you been watching Sherlock? Benedict Cumberbatch.
Why,
oh, man. What a
hard. I'm not sure.
This is why Elliot was so good at playing Andy Rooney. Because Andy Rooney would just do that stream of consciousness thing.
Annie Rooney?
Andy.
The lovable girl from the Depression who complained?
Yeah, Kit Harington and Annie Rooney.
The sun will come out, but why does the sun have to come out? The moon will come out, but nobody sings songs about it. I guess there are a lot of songs about the moon now that I think about it, but I can't know all the songs. I don't have a digital audio tape in my head.
No reason to keep going.
Anyway, but that's the truth. The point is, it all comes to a head when everybody knows everybody else is there.
Mount Pompeii explodes.
No, it hasn't happened yet. It's okay. Not called that. They're in the arena. There's this big gladiatorial contest, and they've decided to simulate the battle, reenact the battle in which Kiefer Sutherland subdued the Celts. And they've arranged it so that our heroes, Milo and his friend, the other gladiator, Atticus, are going to die because they're playing the parts of the Celts. And Kiefer Sutherland says, you're going to give me your daughter's hand in marriage, or not only am I not going to invest in your projects, I'm going to tell Emperor Titus that you were bad-mouthing him and you're all going to be hung to death. And so there's a big battle in the arena.
So is during this arena, this reenactment, does Kiefer Sutherland play the Robert Urich? Is that who was on
Robert Urich?
Who's on Unsolved Mysteries?
For Hire.
On Unsolved Mysteries is Robert Vaughn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, then that guy.
So no, wait, I don't
Robert
understand.
Plant.
I thought it was
no, wait,
a reenactment.
Robert Plant. Robert Plant.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know why.
Robert Vaughn. I think Robert Vaughn was a different person.
Look it up. Anyway.
Robert Wagner?
Robert Wagner. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Well, I'm not sure. Look it up, please.
I'm thinking Bob Uecker.
Anyway, why were you – what does that have to do with –
because he said reenactment. So who's the guy who does all the setup and explains it to everybody?
No, well, there's a chorus.
Oh, yeah, there's a Greek
masked
chorus.
Masked speakers. Well, Roman chorus, I guess.
Robert Stack, everybody.
Oh, Robert Stack.
He is Robert.
Of Robert. Yeah, do you see the bazooms on that guy?
Under that
there are so many Roberts,
trench
coat? And we picked none of them.
I mean, there are
the
many
right
Roberts
ones.
We could have picked that we didn't.
Yeah,
Robin Roberts, we
stack,
didn't say that. Rockin' Robert. Tweet,
my brother Robert,
Tweedledee,
Eric Roberts, etc.
Yeah, Robert McCoy, Julia Roberts, Robbie Robertson from the Spider-Man comics. Anyway, the point is they have this big battle where in this big faked battle, but it's real because it's gladiators, that the heroes are supposed to die in, but through a ludicrous bunch of fighting, they manage to kill everybody who's thrown at them.
Yep, because they put the two toughest dudes on the loser side.
And they put them on like
bad dudes.
They put them on like a paper mache mountain.
And they unleashed not your usual mayhem on all those people.
Not your usual mayhem indeed. Anyway,
I'm tired of your usual mayhem. Sick of it. I've seen it a million times before. Let's have some crazier mayhem. Like, I don't know, we'll like throw like watermelons at a ghost.
That's
at a ghost. No, wait. What?
Use a duck to beat up a robber or something. I don't know.
That's not
usual.
That's
crazy mayhem.
Not usual at all. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so they have this, and this is one of two scenes that I genuinely enjoyed.
Okay.
Which was this big battle scene. Now, part of that is because in ancient Roman times, they did do gladiator fights that were reenactment of battles. They would flood the Colosseum and do naval battles. So at least they're taking the idea of a real thing and making a scene out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, they really were making a scene. The head waiter should have ushered them out. It was ruining everybody's dinners. But the point is, they're trying to make a scene out of it, but it gets crazy bonkers and what good fighters these guys are.
Yeah, and the chains that seem to get longer whenever they need
to. They're chained to this papier-mâché mountain, and yet the chains do nothing to hinder their movements to the point that it becomes a benefit where Milo is riding a horse around the arena just clotheslining all the enemy soldiers with his chain. But during this fight, when things look like it's going to be lost and some real Roman soldiers come in because Milo openly insults the Roman Empire, Kiefer Sutherland sends real soldiers in. There's a battle, but then all throughout the movie, there's been little shocks leading up to the eruption of Vesuvius that start out like a horror movie. There's a servant who works for Cassia who's taking her horse out to drink at a river for some reason.
Yeah.
And there's the ground rumbles up and swallows him up and the horse runs away. Mm. And then later the ground's rumbling around the horse and it looks like the volcano's trying to erase the witnesses to the murder it committed. So it's been leading up to this point, and the only person who really noticed that there
spoiler
seems to be...
Spoiler alert, that horse is the only one who survives...
the whole movie.
Yeah,
so... Here's the thing. The only person who's noticed that, hey, the ground keeps shaking, maybe that's not a good thing, is the gladiator owner, who is a total decadent hedonist.
Yeah.
So he wants to get the H out of Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
But Hades. What?
Hades.
Hades. Yeah, he wants to get the Hades out of Pompeii. So while right before the bad guys are about to kill the good guys, Vesuvius erupts and we get into the disaster portion. And now this is the portion of this type of movie.
That's like a good, that's almost the last half of the movie. I mean, I would say the last 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, yeah. This is the last third of the movie. This is the third act. It's the part in any of these movies where the natural disaster finally hits. Mm-hmm. The lovers
and all
are
the
separated.
Petty concerns of man
are put into, are really
stark
thrown
relief,
into
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Stark relief. Tony Stark relief. In that Tony Stark needed to use the bathroom.
You know,
and now he's relieved.
You know what, guys? Man plans, God laughs. You know what I'm saying, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the plan is funny enough, God laughs.
Yeah.
Like, if the man's like, I'm going to put a banana peel down, I'm going to slip on it and fall, God's like, that is rich. Yes. Laughter forthcoming. Ha ha.
I don't know if that's much of a plan.
Laughter achieved.
Like, director.
Like, step A is put banana down. Step B is slip on banana. That's
it's a two-step plan. Step C, fall. Look, how complicated does the plan have to be, Dan?
Step D, profit.
It's Occam's prank. The simplest prank is the best.
The correct one.
Yes. Yes, Stuart.
At this point, Paul W.S. Anderson has set up all the dominoes and is ready to knock them down.
Oh, yep.
Master
gameskeeper. So all the characters are separated.
His intricate design.
So step one is immediately kill Jared Harris and Carrie Ann Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens. Carrie Ann Moss plays Jared Harris.
That's a rap
wife.
On Harrison Moss. Let's get this Mossy Harris out of here.
They call Carrie Ann Moss Mossy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Mossy.
Please don't call me that.
Hey, Mossimo.
I know.
How's that Matrix coming?
Well, it's over. Thanks. Hey, you mementoed anything lately?
No, that was one movie I made.
And other movies you made would be?
I can't remember.
Even Carrie Ann Moss is looking up her IMDb page and like, what did I do? Anyway.
I'm curious.
You are furious.
Yeah, the natural disaster separates everybody. They've got to find each other. They've got to keep their petty fights going as the city around them is destroyed. And I will say this. A lot of this movie looked fake.
Shock-a-lot, guys. Shock-a-lot.
Oh, the Wes Craven movie? Shock-a-lot.
And Disturbia. Right,
oh, anyway. She was in Disturbia.
Go on.
A lot of this movie looked fake and cheap, almost all of it. The actual erupting effects I thought looked really good.
Okay.
Like if this was a 7-minute movie that was just shots of Vesuvius erupting, I'd be like, that was a pretty good movie. But it's not.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to call a movie Pompeii, you got to have good shots of Pompeii blowing up.
Yeah, it's the money shot.
Yeah.
Now, when you say Pompeii blowing up, you mean the city, Pompeii.
That's going to be for you to figure out, Elliot.
Well, I've got to puzzle it out. We've got a regular...
set up some dominoes you have to knock it down.
We've got a regular House of Leaves going on right here.
Yep.
But then the movie gets – it's just people running around and fireballs falling out of the sky. It gets pretty monotonous. The characters are running around. Eventually, though, Atticus meets up with the henchman who looks like Anthony Weiner. And finally, Cassia and –
Milo.
And Milo meet up with Kiefer Sutherland. And you have two pretty good fights. They're not amazing. Some action sequences as fires falling all around. And this is when the special effects get – so fake that they become fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like something out of like a music video from the early 90s.
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to find consistency with our tastes, like the longtime listener,
first time caller,
maybe frustrated, trying to like stack one opinion up of one movie up against the opinion of another movie. But the thing is like, that's a fool's game in the first place. It's true. Sometimes we complain about how stupid CGI looks. But sometimes stupid-looking CGI is so delightful that we can't help but be shocked.
Yeah, after recently we watched that other Swords and Sandals movie, 300 Rise of an Empire, which had, by all means, better special effects, but they were not as much fun to watch.
It's like an Uncanny Valley thing where the better special effects get, the better they are. And the worse they get, the worse they are, except there's this one dip or like a spike where it's like they get so bad that they're super enjoyable.
Yeah, if you
because they look
to see
crazy. Like
Emily Browning chained to a chariot that's rushing
Emily
away
Browning
from
using a
fireballs.
Yeah. Emily Browning using a splinter of wood to pick the lock of her handcuff on a chariot as fireballs fly all around and everything is weirdly flattened and distorted and nothing looks like it's the same plane of reality. And it's like... It's just so, it looks like you're watching Moulin Rouge or something, you mm-hmm. know? Everything, there's all these
yeah,
weird...
like characters riding in front of a backdrop.
Mm-hmm. And there's
Kim
all
Rombit
these...
Rombit comes out and sings like a virgin.
Yep.
We all go home happy.
It's like there's all these weird like zooms and slow-mo for no reason and bad CGI effects. And it's like...
It's called the Paul W.S. Anderson touch.
Yeah, right? Are you guys familiar with the video art of Ryan Trickharton? I think his mm-hmm. name is pronounced. He did an art video called A Family Finds Entertainment, which is crazy. And there were parts of the end of Pompeii that reminded me of that, this like homemade art video where he's using editing equipment to just make the screen explode into shards and things like that. So I guess there when you go – you start with youth queer artist homemade video art and a big budget sword and sandal action adventure. And this is the point where the two converge in terms of the quality of their special effects. And that's kind of a beautiful moment.
Yeah, exactly. And it's punctuated
by... That's what's called the
G-spot. It's very hard to find.
For how you find it. But.
And it ends in a sword fight with Kit Harington, girl spy, and and Keith or Sutherland. Who knows?
And Atticus has his sword fight with Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
Where everyone's swallowed up. Well, there's those swallowed up by Ash. Keith or Sutherland gets... chained to a wall, and Kit Harington and Emily Browning escape on a horse. Kiefer Sutherland is destroyed, covered in hot, fiery ash.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to the outskirts of town, and I guess just get off the horse. And Kit Harington,
no, the horse
bucks and
rears.
Oh, right, because a fireball almost
kills him.
You're
slowing me down, dudes. Mm-hmm.
I wish it was a wisecracking horse, like in Racing Stripes or Hot to Trot
or a Doggo. Does it?
Yeah, no, Hidalgo, the horse, does not talk.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet.
Seabiscuit?
Sure.
No, again, no talking horses in that.
I mean, its name's Seabiscuit. It should
He's
be
like,
making
I
jokes.
See a biscuit, I eat it. That's me, Seabiscuit.
That makes sense.
See you later. Gotta run this race now. Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit out.
He got tired of how he keeps speaking to the third person. I don't think the Oscar chances for this movie are holding up.
It's me, the most popular racing horse of the Depression. Seabiscuit. See you later.
Biscuit.
It's my new character.
But anyway, Kit Harington, they fall off. Kit Harington says, Cassia, you ride this horse. It's not fast enough to carry us both. And she goes...
And you're thinking, oh, they're going to Titanic
They're
going to
pull a Titanic, and she's going to survive. And 100 years later, she's going to throw a necklace into Mount Vesuvius. As an old lady, she's going to take her daughter to Mount Vesuvius and throw a necklace in and go, ooh, when she does it.
Mm-hmm.
And but no, she smacks the horse in the butt as if to say, run away, I'm sexually harassing you. And the horse does. And she says, I don't want to live without you or something. And... She keeps looking at the eruption, and he says, no, look at me, look only at me, and they kiss and are covered in ash and are forever immortalized as lovers in mid-kiss.
They turn into ash people.
As they become a living statue that is dead.
That's shot in like QVC fashion right before the credits
roll. There's like a rotating camera around sure, it. Yeah. This you beautiful this. ash statue can be yours. This
Pompeii moments.
These ash-covered corpses could be yours for only... $499.99. You know what? If you call in the next 10 minutes, $7. We're going to cut over $300 off this
price.
Wow,
only $7.
And nobody was buying it.
Okay.
And speaking of not buying it.
Shipping
is $49.99. Oh, wow. What a
shipping
rip.
Is $700,000. You could either buy shipping for that or you can buy a screenplay from me. Either way, your choice, Hollywood. So, and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like a pretty boring rote movie, and then there's two scenes I would say that are like just crazy enough to work.
Yeah, I feel like we should go to Final Judgments now.
I was kind of segueing into that.
Whether it's a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked, Elliot, you're already saying stuff about it, so why don't you continue saying the thing that you were saying?
It's like 90% bad. No, 93% bad, 7% good bad.
Yeah, I'm going to go...
There's such potential at the end for this to have been a crazy bonkers movie, and they're putting it off as long as... You know what it feels like? It feels like Dr. Jekyll, for almost 2 hours, struggling not to let loose Mr. Hyde, mm-hmm. and in the last 15 minutes, he's like, fuck it, I'll just let Mr. Hyde out. And everyone's like, yeah, this is what we wanted to see!
This is what Larry keeps coming around for.
This is why Larry's totally into you. Well, not you, but Hyde. But you're Hyde. So I guess he's into you.
Yeah, I didn't like the first two-thirds of this movie. I was so bored by them. The last third, I would go so far as to say I kind of liked it, but...
It got super hammy, which helped, too. Yeah,
it was kind of fun and exciting at the end. You know, I'll give a... You know what I'll give a good review to? Going to see the actual Pompeii. I saw it when I was in Italy. Very interesting.
I'd like to see it. I've never been there.
It's fascinating.
I mean, do you feel bad being a tourist in someone else's misfortune?
I mean, it's so... far ago now. I mean,
like, you does go that to make the, them not human beings?
I mean,
has the statute of limitations on compassion run out?
Do you feel that way when you go see a mummy in the fucking museum?
The mummy was an aristocrat who enslaved others. I've got no mercy for him.
Right. Yeah.
No, but it is fascinating.
People. Also, they're super scary.
And I stole all his gold, and I don't want him to come after me.
It is a whole so city preserved
in time. When I'm looking at a mummy in a museum, I'm throwing a shitload of holy water on him so he doesn't get up and strangle me.
Yeah. Sure, turn into a bunch of scarabs or something.
But it's so it's a holy city.
It's an amazing it's a whole city preserved in time.
It's a city full of holes.
And the steel is canoptic jars.
You don't get that. It's worth it. It's worth it.
And now you've got his car, and he wants it back.
Save up the money you would have spent on seeing Pompeii, and then add several thousand dollars to it and buy a ticket to Italy.
Throw it in change into your travel jar. And when there's enough there to go to Pompeii, go see it. Just don't go when Vesuvius is erupting, because you'll turn into an ash man.
That'd be bad news.
Ashman Crothers.
Stu, what do you have to say? I'm an Ashman. You guys all know that about me. Yes.
Dan's and other people's wives' ashes, man.
Yeah,
I'm going to say this is a bad, bad movie. I wasn't quite as charmed by the hammy moments, and I was hoping for more, obviously. There was that great shot where Kit Harington is about to deface the Roman eagle, and it cuts like a quick cut zoom on Kiefer Sutherland's face, and he's like, he's not going to. But other than that, now it was garbage.
Yeah.
Right. Baby
Geniuses. Hey, everybody. I'm Emily.
And I'm Lisa.
We co-host Baby Geniuses every other Monday on Maximum Fun.
We interview comedians, musicians, cartoonists, circus clowns, and experts in the field of...
vacations, the afterlife, cool, recipes, self-improvement, fashion, candy, beach boys, girls, turtles, pop quiz, women, dating, fitness, presidents, hair removal, conflict resolution, Santa, meditation, babies, modern dinosaurs, bullying, crop circles, the Beatles, middle-aged men, experts, teens, life hacking, rhyming, baby talk, personal organization, the name Dexter, Frasier, extreme eating, groceries, being a best friend, movement, jam, art education, America's funniest home videos, stockbroking, spooky stories, genealogy, riddles, Pinterest, IT, magic, revenge, mothering, dogs, ayahuasca, Hollywood legends, street racing, fitting in, celebrity sex, the occult, personal training, the ocean, Dennis the Menace, modern poetry, sugar gliders, Jimmy Buffett, Franks, The Tonight Show with Gunn, Johnny Carson, Mountain Dew, theme park safety, dinner parties, butterflies, raccoons, pasta shapes, and Bob Dylan. Join us every other Monday!
Yay!
I listen to Bullseye for the moment when Jesse asks an artist an insightful question, and the artist goes, oh, huh, and pauses. And you can hear in the pause that he is reassessing his own work in light of the question that Jesse just asked.
Bullseye's your guide to what's good. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Before we move on to letters, a few quick announcements, as is often the case. On December the 13th, as I mentioned before, I will be appearing at the Slate Movie Party in Videology in Williamsburg. That's at 6:30. There will be information about that up, I hope, soon on the Flophouse website. Details are sketchy.
You
still
said,
I hope
soon, as if anyone other than you is going to be putting that up.
No, I just meant...
if we can get our tech guy, Jasper, on it.
I just meant that I hope, for the benefit of our audience, that that information will be available to them soon.
So, yeah, put it up there, dude.
I'm waiting on Slate to give me the final deets, as the kids say. But
he was trying to avoid talking shit about Slate.
Yeah,
and
but you pushed
school invited to this party.
But
well, hey,
yeah,
man,
come
if,
see
if
that.
Honesty is your policy, you didn't have to worry about that kind of thing.
Dana Stevens of Film Creative Slate will be the host, and we'll have other guests. But if you want to see all of the Flophouse crew,
and
you'll
why
have to wait.
You? We're good looking.
Until January 9th.
January 9th.
January 9th. Why do you... Say that like it was a question.
At the Bell House.
Dan, if you write this stuff down
I don't
and read
it,
down. Then it's easy to remember. But January 9th, 10 p.m.,
yeah,
the Bell House, Brooklyn. All three floppers for the first ever live Flophouse episode recording.
Yeah.
Featuring you, the listener, in the audience. If you've got an irritating laugh, you'll know you're
totally
there.
Totally buy a ticket and show up. Yes.
And then when you go, and you hear it on the podcast, you'll know you were there. But yeah, that's going to be – you buy your tickets online now because, one, they're cheaper if you buy them ahead of time, and two, they are selling out fast.
They're selling pretty quick,
They're
right?
selling yeah. at a good clip. So if you want to go and you're on the fence, buy a ticket and go.
I overheard – I was literally sitting behind the organizer of this PodFest at an event that Elliot and I got to see John Hodgman interviewing John Cleese, and I overheard – him talking about
now. You
how.
Said that as if we went together. You were sitting behind him. I was sitting way in the back because
well,
we went.
Neither of you guys told me about
good job.
Because I had to leave.
I
work
was a lowly writer. I got to leave work earlier than the head writer, so I got better seats.
Yeah,
but I was sitting.
He
behind
was like,
this
Dan, I need your input on the script. Dan, Dan? Just Dan died 5 years ago.
But I literally
Dan McCoy, but he died 80 years ago.
I literally
some over- say they can still hear him sighing in the night.
Is that the creaking of the trees or the creaking of his knees?
Women still say they can feel his spectral hand on their buttocks, and they do not appreciate it. Spectral hand.
Okay.
I overheard a man.
His special hand. Not the other one, the boring one. The good one. The special one. tingly one.
I overheard a man who did not know that I was sitting behind him and was one of the co-hosts of the show.
Didn't know he was
show.
Sitting in front of Kit Harington, girl spy.
But he was talking about how well these tickets to the Flophouse show were selling. So if you want on
I believe
board,
he compared them to a certain type of cake yeah, of sure. the heated variety.
Yeah. So get on that, guys, if you're interested.
January 9th, 10 p.m., Friday. Flophouse Live, Bell House, New York PodFest. Buy your tickets now. And I think we have another thing to plug, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. In December, for Flophouse fans who like to read stuff, I know there's
I
a few out there. There, Dynamite Comics is putting out a the Flash Gordon Holiday Special featuring three short stories written by the three of us.
It's
one for each of us.
All Flophouse written holiday special. And now these are not Flophouse stories. These are Flash Gordon stories.
These are Flash Gordon stories.
Yeah. Savior of the universe.
Yeah.
He'll save every one of us. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's coming out in December. I think early December, but I'm not totally sure.
I don't know the exact date, but pre-order it through your comic book store or yeah. tell them to reserve a copy for you and
if
they'll
you
hold it.
If you Google Flash Gordon Holiday and our names, you can find a site that will allow you to pre-order it. Mm-hmm. On the internet.
And if you Google Flesh Gordon Dan McCoy, you'll find some video that's horrifying. You shouldn't watch it.
No, I think you should watch it. That's what I like.
No, gross. So the Flash Gordon Holiday Special, and just for me, if you want to read something written by just one flopper, December also sees the release of the first issue of Spider-Man and the X-Men, number one, written by me, coming from Marvel Comics.
Elliot Kalin, taking over comics.
Taking over comics, two books at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But now... the moment you've all been waiting for.
What moment's that, Dan?
Letters from listeners. That's you guys, the listeners.
You're the listeners. We're the guys who read the letters from you, the listeners. Listeners are you, and we are the hosts. Let's just get this straight. You're too big for your britches, listeners. You write us letters. You think we have to read them. Well, we don't. So you sit down. You sit down, sir. Sir, sir. Sir, do I have to call security? Sir, sit down, sir. Sir, there's a show going on. But, sir, excuse me, sir. But, excuse me, sir. But, that kind of language is uncalled for.
But,
sit down, sir. Uh-huh. Sir, sit down, sir.
But,
sir, sir. I. But, we do not have to serve you, sir. Sir, sir. You are getting loud, and the performers don't appreciate it, and I don't appreciate it. You and your date are going to have to leave. I'm sorry, sir. Sir, security, can we remove these, please? Please, from you, the listeners, today. Was that the security?
That was the security.
Oh, I thought you said Scaredy. Like, is that the security guy?
Yeah, his name's
Old Scaredy.
We call him Scaredy. It's ironic because he's not scared of anything.
So this first letter is titled, "You're Never Going to Believe This, Guys," parentheses, "It's About the Hat." And it goes like this.
Wait, hold on a second. Is this the guy who lost his hat?
Yeah. The hat's gone again.
How did you lose it again?
No, I'm not joking.
Lock that hat up.
And I'm not baiting you to get it on the podcast again. The hat is seriously gone.
First they shrink the kids, blow up the kids. What the fuck, man?
No.
They blow up themselves.
No, they shrank themselves.
What?
That was the movie about terrorists. Honey, I blew up myself.
Were you going to...
Boom. That was like a Jeff Dunham level joke. So for listeners who are just coming into this ongoing saga, a guy wrote in who had lost his hat. He wrote in later to say he had found his hat. Mm. Apparently he lost it again.
Yeah, he says, I didn't wear it in winter because it's a baseball cap. And I have winter hats that are warmer than a baseball cap. So I wore those hats instead. Not at the same time, mind you. I'd pick one winter hat and then wear that in winter.
I'm revoking your license to wear hats. I'm taking away your 00 hat status.
But keep writing.
But I don't think the hat is missing. I think the hat has been stolen. I've narrowed down my list of suspects from the initial 32 to 16. So I'm making progress. Top of my list is my neighbor, Howie. He's really old, and I think he's had kidney stones for like a year and a half, which is not good for you.
TV's Howie.
So I hope he gets that out soon, unless he took my hat, in which case I hope that thing balloons to the size of a pumpkin and his wife has to roll him around in a wheelbarrow.
Whoa.
I've invented a new device called a wheelbarrow. It's a replacement for car tires made basically of an empty barrel that breaks super easily and mostly just destroy cars' undercarriages. In any case, here's a photo of me wearing the hat when I was in Boston a long time ago.
Describe it, Dan.
No, I don't have to. Here, I'm going to show it to you. I mean, it's...
No, describe it to the listeners,
well,
Dan.
Well, it's just...
They can't see it when you hold up a picture to me.
It seems to be a typical cap of the baseball style. It doesn't appear to be...
of the baseball an actual, style.
It doesn't seem to be promoting any baseball...
It does.
It's hard to tell if there's a logo on there or not. Yeah, the angle is very bad.
The person wearing it has at least one eye.
It looks a little floppier than a normal baseball cap, like now, a softer type of fabric, maybe.
I don't think that's the case.
Canvas?
I think it's just been bent over time.
You think?
Now look,
it's been well loved.
He mentions that he was wearing the hat in Boston a long time ago. So Bostonians, you'll recognize this hat. You'll have the scent. So I guess go sniff it out.
Yeah. Anyone in Boston?
See which one of the 16 Ronin took it.
Come across a baseball cap, right in. Let us know. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
No, we won't.
together, you and we.
You're on the flop hats.
All of us. We're going to solve this thing.
You and me and everyone we know. It's going to find this hat. That's what that movie's about, right?
Yeah. So thank you for writing in.
Nope.
Next letter is titled Foggy Friday, Slightly Soggy Saturday, Wet Wednesday. Too cold for a tube top Tuesday? Yes, you're correct, Elliot. This is an email about Misty Monday. I don't know why. I mean, I feel like...
I feel like Dan... I mean, we all are familiar with her work, but I feel like Dan's the only one who has been in contact with her in some way.
Yeah.
Maybe the writer of the letter is negging Dan to make Dan feel bad.
Oh, in that case, mission accomplished. Look at him. He's crying in his boots.
crying in his boots.
Collects the tears.
Real Snuffy
boots.
Smith. Yeah.
And then Lulu comes up over and sniffs him like she had Hal's boots that one time. I've recently started listening to your back catalog.
It's weird.
And I do a headphone double take every time you mention Misty Monday. Prepare to be jealous, boys, because I've had one of the greatest conversations of my life with the aforementioned starlet. Before I get to that conversation.
You put the tarp over here?
Yes, these are the most absorbent tarps that we have, ma'am. How many women did you say would be on this tarp? Six? You're pushing the maximum load. But.
No, just clean it off with bleach. It's simple. Just pour a shitload of bleach.
Yeah.
Nah, don't worry about mixing water with
now,
it.
I thought
take
you
it in your backyard and spray it down with a hose.
Now, I thought you were saying this.
Take it in the back and spray it down.
Now, I thought you were saying this softcore pornographic film of yours took place in some kind of Middle-earth setting. Do you worry about how you're going to explain the tarp?
No? Okay.
No? All right. Well, that's the best one we got. It's a tarp master. Let's see what the warranty says. More than four lesbians at once kind of voids the warranty. I hope you're okay with that. I mean, it's not an expensive tarp, but you would be able to return it if it was only three lesbians that broke it.
Mm-hmm. One of the ring wraiths is going to have to not be on the tarp.
Well, anyway, this conversation.
The ring rings.
Before I get into the conversation, let me back up a bit. My boring day job consists of sculpting action figures for video games and comic book movies.
That doesn't sound boring at all.
Every once in a while,
is this Randy Bowen?
One of my coworkers does some sculpting for a science fiction or horror film, and I think, hey, that sounds like fun. Maybe I could do that someday. Well, that day came a few years ago. I got a call that a B horror film needed a bunch of classical nude male sculptures, preferably muscular and in slightly homoerotic poses. I had about five sculptures fitting that description ready to go. When I dropped off the sculptures
just
on
already?
Set, I guess, you know,
just
for a rainy
around.
Day.
Yep.
I got
his apartment is a Zalman King set.
When I dropped off the sculpture on set, I got invited to be an extra in a few scenes. While waiting around for a scene, I started talking to Misty Monday. Now, at this point, I had no idea who Misty Monday was or the nature of her oeuvre. All I knew was she was a cute girl, and this was a splatter flick. This was our entire conversation. Me. So are you going to get killed in this scene? Misty. No, but I do get a death scene. We're filming it in a few days. Me. Nice. How do you check out? Misty. I get stabbed in the pussy. Me. Silence. At that point, I started to realize what kind of movie this was going to be.
Show business.
In case you're wondering, it does contain ding-dong ripping incest and a plethora of real New Jersey bodybuilders. The name of this movie? Sculpture. Alex, last name withheld.
I don't know that movie.
So
I'm really only familiar with her seduction cinema work.
Yeah.
I mean, she check it out, though. It sounds like a pretty good recommendation.
Yeah, sure. It's got ding-dong ripoffs.
Homoerotic sculptures, everything you want in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mainly look for in my movies. Yep. King Kong, no thanks. No homoerotic sculpture in this.
But a real brush with greatness. Thanks for letting us know.
So real Hollywood tales here on the Flophouse.
True Hollywood stories.
So I guess if Misty Monday is listening, tell us if that story actually happened. We need corroboration.
Come visit. You know, be on the show.
Sure.
I guess. I mean,
Aaron Brown,
I guess
we could just start.
Is this an official invitation?
Yeah, no, this is official.
Start inviting people to be on the show?
If anyone knows Aaron Brown,
I guess so.
Tell her to come. Tell her about the podcast.
I'm going
to
start working on it.
Who knows? I mean, Mads Mikkelsen, cool. Invite him on, sure.
Whoa, no kidding?
Yeah, ask him to come
on,
Dan.
Both of them at the same time. About Misty Monday.
Mads about Monday.
And Misty Monday, nay Aaron Brown.
What about Udo Kier? Udo Kier, if you're listening, come on the show.
I mean, he's got some free time.
David Byrne?
David Byrne, come on the show.
All of our heroes.
Wait, you didn't say Gabriel Byrne, because I don't want him to come on the show.
No, Gabriel Byrne.
He's probably got some stories about Miller's Crossing, but they're probably, cool he probably tell some very boring.
I only want to ask him about Cool World.
Was it cool to make
what
cool
was it like to have sex with a cartoon?
Did you guys
it awesome?
Where did your penis go when you had sex with the cartoon? What happened?
I mean, Misty Monday could probably answer that too.
So, this last letter is from PJ, last name withheld.
Funny bunny.
It's titled, Recasting Gary Oldman's Dick. I'm growing increasingly concerned about the Flophouse's ongoing obsession with Gary Oldman's shriveled, unimpressive penis.
We mentioned it like once.
Far be it from me to claim you doth protest too much. But you have to be so negative? If Gary Oldman's penis had such a harmful impact on the Scarlet Letter, why not provide some constructive criticism? As you'll recall, Stewart has already spoken admiringly about Michael Fassbender's penis.
Yeah.
Elliot would probably enjoy seeing Sly Stallone returning to his early pornographic roles. And Dan is a homophobe, not
singular.
True. But what celebrity phallus could have saved this movie? Obviously, the Castle Freak is out. Maybe the world would like to see Vincent Gallo's penis unobscured by Chloe Sevigny. A massive prosthesis.
Is that how you pronounce that?
I don't know. A massive prosthesis a la Boogie Nights. Regardless, I see a real business opportunity for the Flophouse in opening a male nudity version of Mr. Skin. I think it already exists, but this is off
it's
the top of my
Mrs.
head.
Skin.
But you could call it Mr. Foreskin, and the logo would just be the Flophouse logo. But you'd all be wearing turtlenecks. My main concern is that the site would break up the gang, as Ding Dong Gate would finally tear you apart, debating whether or not to include the Castle Freak. If you go forward with it, I demand $700,000 in repayment for providing the idea.
It's only $700,000.
TJ, last name withheld.
Funny bunny.
I'm on record as being a Gary Oldman apologist.
Specifically for his penis?
For his penis. Specifically for his penis.
What record is this?
He was saying that because it's
is
in a cold lake.
Is that gold record that they put on the satellite and sent into space?
He's swimming around on a cold lake. You cannot judge a man's penis by...
You don't have to use a cold lake.
I mean, but it's still
just for a cold lake scene. Well, I've seen impressive flaccid penises in movies.
Yeah, but a flaccid penis gives no... You can't judge
And in my own life, every time I look in the mirror.
Sure, boom.
So you're saying that Gary... So Dan is on the record saying Gary Oldman is a grower, not a shower.
Exactly.
Sure.
Look, Gary Oldman's penis is fine. I'm just saying it's not the kind of penis that would drive a Puritan woman to
mad
desire. Yeah.
Uh-huh. to masturbate in the bath while a comely serving lady looks on
puckishly. Was there like a magic butterfly or something? Am I remembering that correctly? Like a magic bird?
It was a bird or something.
Yes.
Like representing sex, I guess. The red bird of sex.
The red bird of sex. The blue bird of unhappiness is much more popular sister.
Yeah.
But recasting Gary Oldman's penis.
I mean, just take a plaster cast of it so we have it for history.
Maybe we could recast it with like the weasel from Food Fight. Kind of look like a penis.
What about one of the shy Halud from Dune?
What about like Lowly Worm from the Richard Scarry books?
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a lot of personality.
Wears a little hat with a feather in it. Now, if Demi Moore was stumbling through the forest and saw Gary Oldman and his penis had a little hat with a feather on it, she would have to run to that bathtub to masturbate, or else she's just doing it in the woods right there.
Yep, or maybe we could go down to an Aztec temple and summon Quetzalcoatl.
Ah, the winged serpent, huh?
And videotape it and then stick that in the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I hope that answered your question.
Yep.
And now...
Or, you know what? Beaker. Just stuff Beaker on him. And so his penis is going, wee, 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 wee.
It's a very selfish penis. All it cares about is me. Not what about her needs?
Oh, Dan, did you just kick me in the gut with your words? I gotta sit the rest of this episode out.
You know, nothing makes me happier. Oh. Like, the one thing that makes me happier than a laugh from Elliot is the sound of moans of pain.
Anything that makes you drive Elliot away from comedy in its entirety.
It's a good thing I already had a child, because I don't think I can have one anymore after that joke.
So this is the last segment of the show. It's where we recommend movies that we actually liked rather than Pompeii. I'm going to go first because I think this is going to be a controversial recommendation.
Pompeii.
Dante's Peak.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I don't necessarily think is a particularly good movie, but it's one that I've had a lot of fun watching.
I've already recommended that.
Whenever I come across this movie on television, I usually stop, watch it for a while.
Open up shop, you said?
Yeah, DMX.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's a movie
about... Is that a bike? DMX Bandits?
Yeah. It's another movie about a volcano erupting in a highly populated city, and it's called Volcano.
All right, basic title.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Thomas Leeworth Jones.
Haish.
And Annette Haish.
That was at the height of her popularity, right?
When she was... Yeah. Was she the former Mrs. Ellen DeGeneres then, or not yet?
I don't know. I don't know whether there's... This was either pre or during Ellen DeGeneres.
Okay.
This was not post her relationship with Ms. DeGeneres. But this was... it's a silly disaster movie, but it builds nicely. The ridiculousness of it is all fun. I enjoy the fact that they use concrete barricades to make lava flow down to the ocean. That's their big plan. Tommy Lee Jones is barking out orders as LA's like disaster preparedness.
I want you to search every hen house, dog house, cat house for this volcano.
I just remembered a lot of it took place in a subway tunnel, and then some dude got all melted by that.
It's got fun, like it's got fun volcano effects.
Yeah,
and, like,
man.
Sound mixing and
hey,
shit.
Hey man, if you
it's
like
just fun,
it,
bro.
If you like it, go with it.
At the end of it, there's a big volcano in the middle of LA, and they play I Love LA over the credits.
Yeah.
Fun.
No, it's fun.
No, yeah, it's a laugh. It's a larf.
It's a larf.
Check your brain at the door.
Yeah. No, literally. I mean, in this case, actually, check your brain at the door, but you'll have a lot more fun watching it than Pompeii.
So it's a good, bad movie.
You know, it's a movie I kind of like. Okay. I know it's bad, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah, just pop some Redenbachers.
Yeah. Stick it up your ass.
The whoa,
what
Dan.
What is going on?
Are you a volcano drunk?
Yep.
I don't know what's happening.
Oh, man. Okay, so...
Dan is not sick anymore, yet somehow it still doesn't make sense.
Am I allowed to recommend a movie now?
I hope so, please. Okay. Who knows, at any minute, Dan's going to start sticking things up butts.
I'm going to recommend a New Zealand horror comedy that I think should be made available in most streaming services. I think you can rent it in most streaming services now. It's called Housebound. It is a interesting little horror comedy, basically a haunted house story about a young woman who has a criminal background who is sentenced to house arrest in her mother's house. And she realizes that her crazy mother, that the stories her crazy mother tells about the house being haunted might actually be true. And the interesting things, they do some good stuff with playing with the actual space, like the limitations of being actually under house arrest with an ankle monitor. And the lead is very charming, and she's also very capable. But like a lot of horror comedies, after the setup is great, and the first two thirds are a lot of fun, and it kind of drags in the final third. It could probably use some editing. But there's also a couple of good scenes of really gory stuff, so I like that.
So a couple of qualified recommendations. So
yeah, far. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to give two unqualified recommendations.
Do it.
The first is a movie that I hadn't thought originally about recommending tonight, but it's a similar type of movie to what we watched. It's not based on a real natural disaster, but it's based on real-ish types of things. And that's the movie The Hurricane, directed by John Ford. This is the 30s The Hurricane, not the movie The Hurricane starring Denzel Washington about Hurricane Carter. Mm-hmm. This is
based
a movie
on the Bob Dylan song.
Yes, yeah.
And the drink.
The song is based on a real person too. But no, this is The Hurricane with directed by John Ford with John Hall, Dorothy L'Amour, and a number of star character actors of Hollywood's yesteryear, such as C. Aubrey Smith, Thomas Mitchell, Raymond Massey, John Carradine. It's got a great cast.
And me, Seabiscuit.
Nope.
World most popular horse.
Nope, not in it at all. And it's about man and woman who love each other on a Polynesian island. The man is goaded by – he's a sailor, and he's goaded by a racist white man in a
What does goaded mean? Like he gets turned into a goat?
Yeah, yeah, he gets turned into a goat. Goaded. No, he's taunted. He's goaded and he's taunted into fighting and is thrown in jail. And he tries to escape to get back to the woman he loves. And each escape tacks more time onto his sentence. And so he's ground down by the system until finally a hurricane is going to arrive on his island right when he escapes successfully. And the hurricane scenes are when they hit. Are genuinely frightening to me. I felt like it's this weird thing because it's a movie from 1937, so that you'll see one shot that looks super fake and then another shot edited a second later in that looks very real and is very scary. Like it looks like these people are in danger from this hurricane. And so a lot of the effects hold up really well, not all of them. It's a very, naive, simplistic tale of love between kind of what Hollywood's idea of Tahitian villagers would have been at the time. But it's a really good old-fashioned kind of like pulpy romance adventure movie of a type that Pompeii wants to be and doesn't quite pull off. So The Hurricane I'd recommend based on this movie. But also I was originally going to recommend a movie I saw recently that I liked called The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith, which is an Australian movie from the late 70s about that takes place at the turn of the 20th century. And it's based on a novel that was adapted from a true story about an Aborigine who was – raised by white parents and tried to do his best to kind of make something of himself in the Australia of the time, which was at the time horrifically racist against Aborigines. Now I guess it's just maybe a little bit. But he is so beaten down by the system that he snaps and commits a horrifically violent crime and has to go on the run and is being hunted down by the Australian police and army. And so it manages to tell like an anti-racism story in a way that doesn't feel totally heavy-handed and stupid and dull. And there are a lot of very affecting scenes in it. And the lead guy, who I think was not a professional actor when he made the movie, is really good in it as Jimmy Blacksmith. So The Hurricane for fans of weather and weather-based adventures, and The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith for fans of blacksmiths.
How's the weather in that?
It's pretty nice mostly. There's a few rainstorms, but otherwise, for fans of older Australian films.
All right.
We did it, dudes.
Yeah. Another sword and sandal movie down.
Dude, can we not watch any more of these?
Maybe they'll stop.
Oh, man.
Of all the inexplicably returning trends, sword and sandal is a weird
one. Well, here's a good, here's something to keep your spirits up. I think next episode we'll do the contest winner listener choice from our Song of the Autumn
And that choice was...
are we going to say ahead of time?
No, let's keep it a surprise for now.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not another Hercules movie,
right? Let's
just
assume it's Ghostbusters and that we're going to have a great time watching it.
And we'll have no criticisms of it, and we'll just spend an hour talking
the
about
criticism,
it.
Like, the only criticism will be that Ghostbusters 3 hasn't gotten off and been made yet because the world is calling out for a third Ghostbusters.
I thought it was that Save Another Day song or whatever.
Saving the Day?
Saving the Day, yeah.
Save Another Day.
Save Another
Day. It's for the fucking sequel or something.
Yeah.
The James Bond Ghostbusters crossover.
Tomorrow never busts. Ghost finger. Such a ghost finger. A spider's ghost. It's ghost finger.
Octobusty.
Die and
let it kind of was Octobusty already. Dr. So, Ghost.
Yeah.
You only live twice if one of the times you count is when you're a ghost.
So, I guess that's the end of the podcast.
We can keep going with these.
I don't think we can.
The ghosting
based
bus
on
lights
the jokes that we've been making for the podcast called The Flophouse. I've been Dan McCoy.
Yeah, I'm also on The Flophouse, and my calling is Stuart Wellington.
Your calling?
This really is an application.
And I'm on The Flophouse too through some bizarre blessing bestowed upon me by a merciful God, and my name is Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
See you later.
Seabiscuit.
Dan, which Cenobite would you not want you to jack you off?
Would I not mind jacking off?
No, if
no,
you
no, no. No,
wait
no, no.
Wait, are we to talk about... Wait, we have to jack off a Cenobite now?
Dan, you totally misunderstood who was doing the jacking of who.
Although...
This is a better
really
question. So, Dan, answer the question.
That's gonna put new meaning to the term yanking my chain.
I don't remember.
Because they have chains for penises.
Really
they call them pinfullers.
I remember one of the Nightbreeds. There was that moon face.
And Nightbreeds, all dudes jacking each other off.
Okay, fine. Which Smurf would you rather have sex with, Dan? Can't say Lady Smurf.
Vanity Smurf is off the table.
You're taking a lot off the table.
Vanity Smurf is watching.
You can choose between Papa Smurf with the other ones. Book Smurf
there's
with the other
baker
ones.
Brainy.
Cook Smurf.
You'd hook up with Brainy Smurf?
Look, it's
no,
like
choose,
Revenge of the Nerds taught us. Nerds just think about sex.
You choose sure. Papa Smurf because he's been around the block. He knows a few tricks.
Yeah,
I was going to do...
He's a real
I'd
bear.
That's true.
I guess,
yeah. And if you blur your eyes, his beard makes his face look like a vagina.
What?
I don't think so. I'm going to call no on that.
I'd pick. Is there a Baker Smurf? I'd pick the one that would have food in his apartment after we're done having sex. Yeah. You know, to give replenish my energy.
Yeah. You're going to lose a lot of electrolytes.
The problem, wait, the problem with Smurfs...
Does a baker bake electrolytes in his bread?
This is sports bread.
It's orange. That's
quick,
okay.
Somebody get those
bread.
Shark Tank dudes on the line. Sports bread's a great idea.
This purple sports bread. Now, here's the thing. It's hard to have sex with a Smurf because their dirty talk is so incomprehensible. They're like, oh, yeah, Smurf my Smurf. Smurfier. Smurfier. Smurf it.
Mm-hmm.
Smurf. It's difficult.
So, yeah, that would be an obstacle for you to overcome.
Yeah, of course, because communication is the bedrock of sex.
And the brain is the biggest erogenous zone.
Not if you have a 40-pound penis.